So in this text called Manashodhanam or purification of mind, we have done 18 verses, but we have understood about the need to purify the mind and what are the negativities of the mind, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, and also how these can lead to all kinds of problems. We have studied, and also we have studied the nature of the wise person who deals with the world just as you and I do, but we usually blame the world for our wrongdoing. Oh, he made me do that, or because of the him I got angry, or because of this situation I became dishonest, or we blame the mind. You know, that's just how I am. That's how the Lord created me. So we blame him or we blame the world. But the wise person also has the same mind that you and I do. The wise person also deals with the same world. But how is that saint or that prophet or that realized master able to overcome the impurities of his mind? Through right knowledge and through a constant alert awareness about the mind's weaknesses, the mind's problems, the mind's negativities, and by effort. It does not happen overnight. You cannot say, today I'm, you know, Anil and tomorrow I'm going to become a saint. It's not going to happen. Take maybe a few lifetimes. But at least we have to put the effort. And last week we had seen how the student approaches the teacher in verse number 18 with humility. And the student himself is a very evolved student because he already has lot of purity of the mind, but he still wants to learn from the teacher. And the teacher also is Naradji, who we had heard about, is a great saint, a great sage. And so what is the answer? How can we purify the mind? And the biggest impurity of the mind is desire. So today I think most of my talk or all of my talk will be spent on desire, because that is the root cause of all the problems. And then maybe next week we'll cover the other impurities. So verse number 19 on page 36, those who have the text.
Asankalpa jayet kamam. Pajayet kamam. Krodham kama vivarjanat. Arthanartheksaya lobham. Bhayam tatvava marshanat.
So teacher, in this verse has given us the method of removing four impurities of the mind. Asankalpa jayet kamam. Kamam means desire. So how do you conquer desire? Asankalpat, remove fanciful thinking. What is fanciful thinking? I will talk about that. So remove desire by fanciful thinking, removing that. How do we conquer krodha, anger? Kama vivarjanat. Anger can be conquered by giving up desire, because desire is the source of anger. And then lobham. The lobham is greed. So how do we conquer greed? By artha anartha ikshaya. By seeing that how wealth can actually pollute your mind or can cause calamities in your mind. We say, how can wealth do that? Well, we probably won't do it today, but we'll do it next week. And bhayam tatva avamarshanat. By seeing the reality, the truth that is the support of this universe, which we call as Brahman or the consciousness, by knowing that, you can overcome fear. So today, as I said, we'll mostly just talk about desire. Because I feel, and most of our masters feel, that desire is the root cause of everything else. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, when the student asks the teacher, the Lord, who is here teaching the student, the Bhagavad Gita, that's the depiction of that. What is the greatest obstacle to man's progress. Why is man not even knowing what is the right thing? Why don't we not do it? So they say there are two negativities, desire and anger. And they say desire and anger are two sides of a coin. Now you cannot have heads without having tails. So similarly, you have desire, you have anger. Or you have success and failure. When you are successful, you are happy. When you fail, you are angry. So success is the head, failure is the tails. So when you succeed, you show your head to everybody proudly. And when you fail, you show your tail and run away. So desire is the cause of all problems. And what are the problems that desire can cause? First of all is anger. I want something, I must have it. And it becomes an infatuation. You know, the repeated thinking about it. I see some object, or I see a person, or I see, you know, or it's a position I want. Again and again, brooding over it, thinking over it. Or even if I get it, but again and again, wanting more and more. And then when I finally do not get what I want, either on the first try, or I was so used to having this success, and suddenly I fail, then it breeds anger. So anger comes when the desire becomes so overpowering that I do not get what I want, and then it totally clouds our thinking. We'll talk in detail about anger and all these others next week, but I just wanted to show that how desire is the root cause. The next one is greed. As I said, you get something and we are never happy. We are never satisfied. You want more and more and more and more. And so ultimately, it becomes an obsession. It becomes overwhelming desire. And then that person's mind is just totally overcome by that. So that creates greed. And then how about jealousy? Well, I got it, but the other one got more. You know, why did he get so much and I don't have it? Or why does he have a bigger house? Or why does he have a better car? Or why does he have a better job? Or how come he can take better vacations? So all these things create agitation in the mind, create disturbance in the mind. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the teacher says, which we will be covering on Sunday, he talks about contentment. Contentment does not mean that you stop progressing, that you just, but when I put my best effort and I have done sincere effort, then at the end of the day, whatever the Lord gives me as a result of my honest effort, Lord, I am thankful to you. Because we all get what we deserve and nobody can take it away from us. So having an attitude of contentment will reduce desire and will reduce jealousy. And then the last negativity that is created by desire is fear. I got it, now I'm going to lose it. You know, I have this stock portfolio, and a stock is now 14,500, and suddenly there is a war or some calamity, and the stock drops 500 points. Oh, I'm so depressed, I can't sleep. Or, you know, I have this money, but now suddenly my relatives appear from nowhere. And, you know, like you win the lottery and they all show up. You know, your distant uncles, you know, cousins, some guy. Oh, you know, I used to take care of you when you were a little boy and I, you know, took you to school. All of us. And then you are afraid. You know, why is this person appearing? Because he wants my money. Or why is this person suddenly become friendly? He never used to even look at me. I would walk by and he would look the other way, but now suddenly I have this. So that is fear, that I have it, so I may lose it. So now how do we remove this desire? As we said, the problem is incompleteness. How does desire arise? Through incompleteness. I feel that I am incomplete, I am deficient, I am somehow not good enough. And through acquiring that particular object or that person or that position or power or that wealth, I will become complete. If I only had this. But there is no end to that. So desire arises out of incompleteness. But then what do we do? How do we feed the desire? by fanciful thinking. So what do we mean by fanciful thinking? I go to the store, I go to the mall, and you know, I need to buy two or three things from Sears, some household items. So I pick them up, you know, and I'm walking. But instead of going to the car, I take a detour through the mall, walk the whole length of Valley Plaza from Sears all the way to Macy's. And then what happens? I look in the stores and then I start seeing, oh, that dress is very nice. That piece of jewelry is very nice. You know, my anniversary is coming up. Maybe I can tell my husband to buy it for me. Or, you know, that if that for a man, you know, that power tool I have or that electrical appliance, you know, I have a TV, but I need a flat screen, plasma, all those, you know. Or I can have a better, you know, I have a phone, but my I only have an i4s, you know, I need an i5. Can't have that. So imagining that, then I start thinking, you know, that dress, if it was on me, how would it look? So then I start fancying, you know, or if that particular piece of jewelry was around my neck. And so then slowly, even though I came to the mall only to get few things, but by fanciful thinking, I keep multiplying. And then I walk out of the mall with 8 or 10 things that I didn't even need. Why? Because I just thought that this particular thing will make me happy. So fanciful thinking is just living in the air, building castles in the air. And we teenagers do that. If we look at teenagers, they all nowadays live in a fanciful world. And who creates that? It's the TV. The TV and the internet, you know, by constant bombardment. You know, if you have this $150 shoes, only then you can, you know, throw the ball, you know, like Michael Jordan. You have to buy those shoes or you have to have that latest outfit. You have this particular hairstyle. And so they create this fence, and then on top of that, the internet. And so they create this fanciful world where then they come, mom, dad, you don't know anything. This is the thing to buy. And that's the first thing, you know, how do you know a person has become teenagers when he thinks that my mom and dad know nothing? That is the sign. Talking about fanciful thinking, there is a very beautiful story how a person can create castles in the air. It's a little long story. I may not finish the others, but we can do that next week. So in India, we have a character called Sheikh Chilli. Sheikh Chilli is a very interesting character. He creates fanciful things in the air. So Sheikh Chilli one day there was a milkman who owned a large dairy farm, and he needed some help. You know, he needed some pick up things from here to there and fix some things. And also 4, 5, 6 hours, this Sheikh Chilli helps him, and he does a good job. So in those days, a lot of times if people didn't have money, they would give goods. So he gives him a big pot of milk. He says, this is your payment for the day and you can have it. So he's very happy. You know, he's more than what he was expecting. You know, milk is expensive. So he's carrying this pot on his head and he's going to the market. He said, I'm going to go to the market to sell it. But on the way, it's a very hot day and he gets tired and he's sweating. And he said, you know, let me just rest for a couple of minutes. So there is a little bench. And like a little broad bench. So he's in the park. He said, let me lie down for a couple of minutes. And when I'm rested, then I'll go. And he puts the pot by his side. And he starts, you know, he's kind of half asleep, half awake. He's not really fully awake. And he starts fancying, you know, he says, this pot of milk I have is worth a lot of money. So what am I going to do? I'm going to the market and sell it. Okay, and then what am I going to do? Then I'm going to take that money and go to that, not to this dairy, go further far away, which is so far from the market that I can buy the milk cheap. And from him, I'll buy 2 pots of milk of the same, you know, for the same amount of money. And I'll get a wheelbarrow and I'll take it to the market and sell it. And then with that 2 pots, I'll get enough money. I can go buy 4 pots of milk and then I have to get a bigger cart. So I'll rent a cart, go to the market and sell it. Then what will happen? Then I'll get more money. And then I'll eventually have so much money that I'll buy my own cow. And then I don't have to go to that. I'll milk the cow, go to the market and sell it. And then eventually I'll have more money. Then I'll have 3 cows and I'll have 5 cows. And eventually I'll become a big dairy farmer. I have hundreds of cows. I'll be very successful because I'm a hard worker. And then what am I going to do then after I'm so rich and successful? Then obviously I have to get married. So I'll, you know, this the rich man of this village, he has a beautiful daughter. I've always admired her from a distance. But when I'm that rich, he's not going to say no. I'm going to go ask him, you know, can I have your daughter's hand in marriage? And of course, he'll say yes. Handsome and rich person like me, not going to say no. So now I am married. And now what I'm going to have two, three little kids, you know, running around. And they will be very cute, very beautiful. But as usual, you know, kids sometimes misbehave. I'm going to be a strict father. I'm not going to let them get away, you know, with just like that. And if they misbehave, I'll talk to them. But if they don't listen, I may have to sometimes slap them. So he put his hand to slap. And then milk fell down. And the pot broke. And that was the end of his fanciful thinking. So that is called fanciful thinking. Living in a world where you imagine that certain things will give me joy. And then you then create this fanciful world. So this is a typical example of somebody who is has some basis, but then he puts so much on that little pot of milk that ultimately he's disappointed because he didn't get what he wanted. So that is the number one, that see things as they are. You know, do not attach undue importance to something. Do not give undue importance to wealth, undue importance to material progress, undue. Everything is in its place, but when we give it our fancies, then we give an unrealistic importance to that, and that is where the problems arise. Then the next we say is talk about needs and wants. And Mahatma Gandhi said it very beautifully. He said, there is enough in this world for everybody's need, but there is not enough in the world even for one man's greed. Even one man, if he wants, he is not satisfied. So what is the difference between need and greed? Need is that what do I need to live? Obviously, I need a house, I need a car, I need a, you know, some money in the bank. If I'm hungry, I need food to eat. If I'm tired, I need a bed to sleep. If I'm thirsty, I need a water to drink. And that is good. And that is need. Not only that, but also I should utilize my resources to help another person's needs. Like there's somebody hungry and, you know, genuinely needs help. I help that person. That is called merit. But giving a party for 100 people who are already overfed and overweight and then feeding them, you know, 8 or 10 dishes, that is waste. That is not. So it says, know what is truly your need. And we need certain retirement and savings and all. But beyond that, when you start accumulating, where then that becomes the whole focus of life. They say money should be a servant that I use to make my life comfortable and make the life of others comfortable. But when money becomes your master and starts riding upon your head, and then the whole focus of life only becomes how can I get the maximum money with the minimum time and the minimum effort, and then with also immoral needs, you know, the desires then become immoral, that it does not matter what I do to acquire the money, it doesn't matter how many people I step over, it doesn't matter how many people I cheat. If I want anything, that's why in the Bhagavad Gita it said, the Lord says, I am desire, but desire which is not opposed to dharma, which is not opposed to righteousness. Because there are righteous desires and there are unrighteous desires. There are moral desires and there are immoral desires. So I need to take care of my body, my family and all. But when I use any fair or foul means to do that, and that only happens when you're not contented with what you have because you want more and more and you cannot get it by legal means. So, and sometimes it may be legal, but it may be immoral. Like, you know, like in business, you know, if you cheat somebody, that is illegal. You can go to jail or you can, you know, be fined or whatever. But you say, I didn't do anything legal. But you made conditions so bad that you put others out of business by underselling them. And, you know, like what China does, you know, they sell products to other parts of the world, even at a loss. By putting other countries' businesses out, then they can market and sell whatever they want. So that may not be illegal, but it is immoral. Why? Because you are doing something which legally may be okay, but morally is not right. So doing business where you are doing things that are immoral, so that is called a immoral desire. So desires should be not opposed to morality, not opposed to the right behavior. And ultimately, of course, we have to go beyond desire, but because even initially you start out by, okay, my desire is to serve, my desire is to help people, to make the world better, and that is good. But then ultimately, like a saint or a great soul, he or she serves the world spontaneously out of love. Even the desire to better the world, they go beyond that. But for you and me, at least we can start out with moral desires. And then we say that desires lead to attachment. And what is attachment? Attachment is I plus I want, a dependence. That only by... So then I get so attached to that particular thing that when somebody wants to take it away from me, I get miserable. Or if by situation happens where that person or that thing is no longer with me, then I become dependent. I become a slave. I become attached to that. It could be a bottle. It could be, you know, a person I loved, but then this person doesn't love me anymore. And then my whole life is destroyed. So attachment means that I do not feel myself to be independently complete. And then when that thing is gone, if I become so miserable that I, you know, want to commit suicide or I feel that my life is ruined, then that is attachment. And all these desires come from trying to fix the external world, especially after the Industrial Revolution. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, life was relatively simple, even though people didn't have all the comforts and didn't have the modern amenities. But life was, you know, comfortable and stable. But when the Industrial Revolution came and all the factories came and all the things, then what happened is life became very complicated. Previously, people lived in the villages and, you know, they were independent. But now they had to move to the cities to get jobs. And the local industries were put out of business. These little, you know, like these people who were weaving cloth, they couldn't compete with the big factories. So people had to move to the cities to get jobs. And so the whole thinking became, because now I have moved, I have to get a job, I have to compete. And so instead of the internal adjustment, because what our teachers tell us that the mind that you try to purify, it is an internal adjustment. Because the mind is something that is within us. Actually, the mind is subtler than us, but it is the inner adjustment that is required. But what we do is we try to adjust the external circumstances, you know, by adjusting this or by changing this person or by adjusting this person or by doing this thing. So constantly try, and ultimately the problem is you cannot change anybody. You cannot adjust anybody. The moment you try to, is that if you want to fail, just try adjusting. Like when a man and a woman get married, the woman thinks the man will change, and the man thinks the woman will never change, and they are both disappointed. The woman cannot change the man, and of course the man, you know, cannot keep the woman as she was when she was 22. So they are both disappointed. So we try to adjust and change our external situations, but ultimately what is required is inner adjustment, and we'll talk more about that next time. About mainly next time I'm going to talk about thoughts. What are thoughts and how do they arise? And then we'll of course continue our other impurities like anger and greed and jealousy and fear and all. We'll talk a little more about that. But I thought desire being the basis of the whole problem arises from desire, I thought we should talk about that in a little more detail. If anybody has any comments, any questions. Right. I think two or three things you can teach him. One is that your desire is good, but it should be moral desires. So try to, as much as possible, work within the law and work within morality. Do what is right, do what is good, do what is not only good for you, but good for society. Then also, that do not get too attached to the results. Do what is right, and once you put the effort, you will get. But if beforehand you start a project with the idea that I must have, by the end of the year, I must have my 500,000, and then 2 years, then he's already thinking about the result, and then there could be, his thinking could be clouded. So you do what is right, put your best effort. We are not saying that we are not against success. If you want to help the world, first you have to be successful. If you are yourself a beggar and you're asking people for money, how can you help anybody else? You don't have time. So yes, one should work hard and be successful, but number one, it should be moral. Two, without it, attachment. And then avoid those four negativities, that if you don't get, I become angry, greed, jealousy. So, but all the time, the person should know that my goal of life, I think that's what we try to teach in our Sunday school when we teach the children. As much as possible, it's hard, you know, they're here only 1 hour a week or 1.5 hour, but the inculcate in within them a love for God. Who is God? Who am I? And what is my goal in life? So we, especially in the older kids, we try to teach them about concepts like, you know, realization, even though they may not reach it, but at least that my goal of life is spiritual. It should be spirituality. So while I am working in the world, that is not my ultimate goal, is not material, but my goal is spiritual. So as you teach them that and inculcate that, then automatically as they get older and as they become more successful, then also they slowly get detached from materialism and turn towards spirituality. Also, I think even when they are young and earning, encouraging them to do some charity, that every year you should do certain amount of your income in charity. Either if you have money, you can do money, or you can do time, or you can do labor. Maybe go on weekends and build a house for Habitat for Humanity. Or you can go and volunteer in a library or a school or in a hospital or go to a nursing home. So teaching them that remember that there is a higher power that has given me everything I have. And whatever I have is his gift to me. So I have to use that to serve him. So I think then his efforts will be also purer.